Life stressing you out? Just not enough hours in the day? Finding yourself running ragged with little hope of just a little you time? Well, friend, fret no more. If you've got time for the shower, you've got time to get your zen on with I Can't Believe It's Not Buddha Soap on a Rope by Bubble Genius. You'll find the path to nirvana with this happy, sudsy Buddha, rendered in gentle, green tea-scented vegetable glycerin soap. And it's on a rope, so this guy can hang around your shower and bring you enlightenment each and every day. So let your troubles wash away and enjoy the peace of the here and now with I Can't Believe It's Not Buddha Soap on a Rope. Only from Bubble Genius, bringing some om to the bathroom. BubbleGenius.com. God.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Now the guy's got Paulie as a partner. Any problems, he goes to Paulie. Trouble with the bill, he can go to Paulie. Trouble with the cops, deliveries, Tommy, he can call Paulie. But now the guy's got to come up with Paulie's money every week, no matter what. Business bad? You pay me. Oh, you had a fire? You pay me. Place got hit by lightning, huh? You pay me. Also, Paulie could do anything, especially run up bills on the joint's credit. And why not? Nobody's gonna pay for it anyway. And as soon as the deliveries are made in the front door, you move the stuff out the back and sell it at a discount. You take a $200 case of booze and you sell it for $100. Doesn't matter, it's all profit. And then finally, when there's nothing left,
fucking shame.
And you can't borrow another buck from the bank or buy another case of booze, you bust the joint out. You light a match.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
You can read about it tomorrow, or possibly see it tonight. But with radio, you get it now and get it right.
Mo, I need your advice.
Yeah.
See, I got this friend named Joey Jojo Jr. Shabadoo.
That's the worst name I ever heard.
Hey, Joey Jojo!
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Hey, it's May 24th, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez, brought to you, as always, by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius, the best damn soap
in the
world.
How the hell do you know that's me?
What? I know, that's you over there.
We're not even in the same room. I could be anybody.
You're not an imposter, sir. We're also brought to you by Full Strength. It's really the greatest fitness shake I've ever tried. I've been drinking it for a couple of weeks now, and I've shaved...
Are we sponsored by them now?
Well, unofficially, we are.
Okay. Send me a shipment of that stuff, damn it.
Yeah, I will. We'll see about it. And I've actually... My average speed on the bike has gone up by nearly 2 miles per hour, which is pretty damn significant. As far as I'm concerned, I mean,
an easier way to do that. You just put a big car behind you.
Yeah, put a be chased by someone maybe the secret to that. No, I mean, it's true. I can tell a remarkable difference in, you know, just my stamina, my endurance, and my just overall energy level.
I want to do that so that I can come back and my comparison. Along those lines will be, yeah, you know what? I was able to stay up late drinking more.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I think Sean Phillips at Full Strength should maybe work on one of those shakes. It's just help you to drink more and more often. But I mean, this stuff is amazing. I mean, it's just in one shake, you get 40 grams of protein. 100% of the U.S.
Just out of curiosity.
What's that?
How much fat, just out of curiosity?
Fat is, total fat is 5 grams.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Saturated fat is just 1 gram.
Cool.
And, of course, no trans fat. 830% of the U.S. RDA of vitamin C.
Right.
120% of magnesium, if you're into magnesium.
Who isn't?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, and it's also, it's a real food. It's not just a supplement. It's an actual food that you eat. It's not just a protein delivery mechanism. It's a complete and balanced, nutritious meal. Fast. And you can make one of these in a few minutes.
Right.
And it's just like full, you know, like two regular glasses, like tumblers that you would have in your kitchen cabinet. Makes two of those. So I usually just gulp the first one down, and then I have the second one with lunch. That's what I do. That's my typical lunch, is I have a sandwich, some form of sandwich, whether it's like tuna or even peanut butter on like wheat bread, and then I suck one of these things down and just drink it right down. So go to fullstrength.com and check out. They've got both chocolate and vanilla flavors, and that's it. They're not screwing around with any other kinds of flavors. It's just those two flavors, and then with like a vanilla, you can add fruit and make a smoothie. If with chocolate, I add peanut butter and
they're
the chocolate.
They're not doing like maple and sage, like Jimmy Dean sausage?
No, they're not.
That's a reference, by the way, to like the best customer call, viral call ever. Have you ever heard that one?
I haven't.
The guy's name is Terry, the guy who calls up Jimmy Dean from Texas to complain about how they're not making the sausage that he wants in his size anymore. Go to YouTube and look that up sometime.
Okay.
Jimmy Dean, I think it's like Jimmy Dean phone call. It's hilarious.
Oh, God. You know what? It's funny you mention that because I have I have another prank call lined up to kick off the after party tomorrow. So lots to talk about today. And speaking of the after party, once again, as with last week, anything that we don't talk about today, we will end up talking about on the after party. So everything we don't get to, we'll just bleed on over to the after party. It just seems to be.
And I may as well go ahead and mention now that my kid is here. So you're going to hear SpongeBob for the next 2 hours.
It's fine by me.
You'll hear SpongeBob in the background.
It's very. We're just talking about it here. It's very trippy, SpongeBob. Mm-hmm. I'm not breaking any news by saying that, but it's true. No. And you know what? Damn it! I forgot to start the timer on the show. Why don't we just do it now?
Oh well.
I got to make sure that we make it friendly for We Act Radio, WPWC, while I'm plugging things 1480 AM in Washington, D.C. It's our first terrestrial affiliate.
And we're first step in our ongoing quest for world domination.
That's right.
Or at least nationwide domination.
That's right. We're on Sunday afternoons from 3 to 4 in Washington, D.C., which I think is pretty amazing that someone actually
Once again,
don't
we have to do time cues and say, like, after the hour? 15 minutes after the hour.
Yeah. It's 13 minutes after 12, 47 until 1. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? On a serious note, you know, a friend of the blog, he's constantly linking to the blog on Twitter. And you know, in fact, he's actually a really big fan of Ashby's posts on the blog. Michael McKeon was hit by a car this week. Did you see that?
Michael McKeon
from Spinal Tap. David St. Hubbins from Spinal Tap. He's also on Laverne and Shirley.
Taryn's nodding, so
yeah.
Obviously I'm in the dark about this.
Yeah, he was hit by a car. He was, I think he was just walking along the sidewalk in New York City, and a car jumped the curb.
Oh, crap.
And smacked right into him.
You know, Dennis Leary used to have a really terrific bit about how one of the best things about living in New York is that there are so many interesting ways to die. You know, I mean, you can fall through a manhole cover. You can get electrocuted by a storm grate. You can have a piece of a building fall on top of you. And yes, you can get, you know, get hit by a car just walking down the freaking street.
Just randomly. Fortunately, oh, yeah. I think he's okay. He broke his leg and suffered some lacerations on his face and things like that. But he seems to be in pretty good condition, and that's the medical term. He's in pretty good condition.
thank you, Dr. Bob.
Yeah, and I was just glad to hear that when I saw Michael McKeon hit by
thank
a car.
You for
I was
that, like, that vague assessment.
Yeah, he's okay.
How's he doing?
I don't know.
He's okay.
Okay.
Well, is he going to be all right, Doctor? He could be. I think. You know what? It's just like your opinion, man.
Well, you know, I wanted to clarify the top of the show, the bit at the top of the show from Goodfellas. Now, if you remember, I don't know how many weeks ago it was, we were talking about Bain Capital and what the function of Bain Capital happens to be and what they used to do.
It's the mob.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's exactly it. They what they do is they bust out businesses. They go in and they take them over, and if the businesses happen to be successful, then they take all the credit. But most of the time, from what I've read, Bain Capital is involved with just going in, firing all the employees, and then filing bankruptcy and bailing out.
Right.
So they basically
they do what Gordon Gekko was going to do to Blue Star.
That's exactly right. They do that. That's exactly the process. If you remember Wall Street, you know, is going to go in and rescue this Blue Star Airlines, which, you know, Martin Sheen was part of the Machinists Union or whatever, the head of the Machinists Union for Blue Star, and Charlie Sheen puts them together, and it turns out that, you know, Gordon Gekko is really just going to bust out the place. And so I noticed on the Huffington Post today that they've got this thing that says, you know, here's Tony Soprano explaining what Bain Capital is. And it's the, remember they did sort of a bust out on The Sopranos where Tony goes in and busts out a I don't know, like a sporting goods store?
Yeah, yeah.
And so they
I'm trying to remember it. It's been so long since I've seen The Sopranos.
Well, they go in and they bust it. I mean, after this guy ends up racking up all kinds of debt, it's whoever the guy is from Terminator 2 who played the
T-1000. Oh, yeah, Robert Patrick. That's right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Owns a sporting goods store. And
didn't they wind up torching Vesuvio, too, if I remember correctly?
Yes, they
did. Totally off subject there.
Yes, they did, but that was to prevent there being a someone getting whacked in Vesuvio.
Right, uh-huh.
Because Tony finds out that that Junior's going to whack someone in Vesuvio, so instead of letting the murder take place in the restaurant, Tony just
burns the place up. Yeah, firebombs the place.
God, you know what? And speaking of all of that, you know, there's a new Stevie Van Zandt mob show on Netflix.
Oh yeah, it's Lillehammer.
Yeah,
I know nothing about it. I've only seen I saw the billboards for it around L.A.
Can we please stop it with the mob shows? I mean, you know, and I'm not saying this because I'm Italian and I get offended by this. I love mob movies. Goodfellas, the Godfather movies. Right. I watched every episode of The Sopranos and loved that show. It's getting exhausting because every time there's a mob show, you see a bunch of white guys walking around the office the next day. Hey, forget about it. You know, they're all like, everyone wants to be pretending like they're in the mafia.
Right.
And it gets really effing annoying. So, yeah. Not only do we want to stop the mob shows from happening, like Stevie Van Zandt, stop it. And then,
I mean, basically playing Silvio again, which is the worst part about it. I mean, yeah. Know, he's Silvio promoted to Tony Soprano's level.
That's right. That's right. And so I guess the premise of the show is that he ends up in the witness protection program and they send him to Lillehammer. Mm. And he, you know, it's fish out of water. It's the mob guy.
Right.
Living in Scandinavia, you know, that's hilarious. You know, getting back to Bain Capital, I mean, the idea, I don't know if you're familiar with the bust out process, but basically they just abuse everything about the business, things that businesses can get, and then just don't pay any of the debts. And then the business owner has to pay all kinds of tribute to the mafia guys. And, you know, and then in the end, they end up just burning down the building. And that's almost exactly what happens with Bain Capital, except they don't burn it down that I know of. What they do they just file bankruptcy. Yeah. And meanwhile, all of them, you know, all of the investors at Bain Capital are completely unscathed by the process. They can literally bust out one of these companies and then not have to suffer any of the consequences. They don't have to. It doesn't affect their personal credit. It doesn't affect their business credit either, because it's the separate company that they've taken over that is ultimately filing bankruptcy. So it's like, it's why not? I mean, if you're in it for the profit motive, why not go in there? You know, and this is their twisted reasoning. Why not go in there, use every resource at your disposal to just suck the life right out of these companies? And that's exactly what they do. And it's bad. I mean, a lot of people. I mean, that's just the thing with the profit motive. The profit motive doesn't really pay attention to the lives that are affected. The people who lose their jobs and then end up possibly losing their houses, losing their ability to have good credits, you know, just on down the line. I mean, it's a disaster. It's a tidal wave of disaster that, you know, Mitt Romney was part of this. And this is the centerpiece of his campaign, of his economic record. You know, this is what he's talking about. And so when Cory Booker says lay off,
that he understands how to bankrupt companies with impunity.
That's right. And so when Cory Booker says lay off of Bain Capital. Well, look, the president has every right to talk about Bain Capital if Mitt Romney is bringing it up as a point of success for himself. So if you criticize Bain Capital, all we're doing is responding to what Mitt Romney is actually saying. So, but that, I mean, to me, getting into the Cory Booker thing, the Bain Capital, the nitty gritty of private equity and all those things, that was sort of secondary as far as I'm concerned, as in terms of disappointing aspects of what Cory Booker was saying. The real disappointing thing about Cory Booker's remarks on Meet the Press this past weekend was the false equivalence, the both sides meme that he brought up, you know, trying to create some sort of equivalence between criticizing Bain Capital and the Republicans bringing up Reverend Wright.
Yeah, they are two different things, certainly.
They are very much two different things. And, you know,
my job here, by the way, is just to say the incredibly obvious. I serve no other purpose.
Down
I'm like
a lot.
Sigourney Weaver in Galaxy Quest. My job is just to repeat the computer.
Right. It was one of those things that I couldn't believe what I was hearing, because you want to think of someone like Cory Booker as knowing better than to bring up such a ridiculous line of reasoning that criticizing Bain Capital is kind of like bringing up Reverend Wright. No, it's not. It's not anything alike. It has nothing to do. One has nothing to do with the other. Bain Capital is a legitimate point in the debate that is being brought up by the Republicans. Now, if President Obama had brought up Reverend Wright and had been talking about Reverend Wright and how wonderful a pastor he was, then of course Mitt Romney would have a right to say, well, I don't know. Here's some audio recordings of Reverend Wright doing and saying ridiculous things. And so there you have a comparison. But it's not happening. It doesn't happen that way. So
you're employing logic, though, when there is no logic in politics.
No.
It's creepy and weird.
It's creepy and weird and bears no resemblance to reality. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's a shy little possum.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back. And I want to talk about Republican lies about the budget, Republican lies about the deficit, Republican lies about the climate crisis. A lot of Republican lies this week. And Tucker Carlson is in the news this week, too. So that's always good news. That's something to look forward to. Quick break, back after this.
Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
And we're back.
Need a bunk on American myth. Take my life in my hands.
So I didn't want to spend too much time on Cory Booker because I think he's pretty much exonerated himself. He's backpedaled so much at this point that he's actually took to Twitter and engaged in an ongoing sort of Twitter rant about marijuana legalization.
Oh, dear God.
Which I thought you would find interesting.
Let's not start that again.
Well, I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of that discussion because we talked about that a lot. I mean, I think everyone knows kind of where we stand on that issue. Right. Both, and just to recap, we're both for it. We're for it. We support marijuana legalization. We're just not radical about it, and we don't think it's like a top priority. You know, it's not like the number one priority. Like if Barack Obama doesn't legalize it, we don't think he should be impeached.
But that's funny that he's trying to, that's the route that he goes to try to win back progressive street cred.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's it. He knows where his bread is buttered on the progressive side, because like it or not, it is prevalent. I mean, everyone's talking about it. I mean, marijuana legalization is just a huge deal right now. And again, I don't understand why. I don't understand why. I mean, it's unfair that it is still illegal, but it is not. God, it's not. It's not even in the top 10. I don't think it's even in the top 20 of critical issues.
Once again, not to get off on the subject again, but Penn Jillette went off on a rant.
Oh yeah, yeah.
About it this past week, and you know, and once again, he made some good points. He did. You know, I mean, he brought up the point of the lives that it has sort of destroyed by throwing people in jail when they don't really deserve to be. And he brought up the point that, look, you know what Barack Obama says, admits to having smoked marijuana. And if he had been arrested, he wouldn't be president right now. Mm-hmm. You know, none of that would have happened. And I do understand that argument. I really do. But yeah, at the same time, I mean, I'm sorry. It's just me. I cannot help but roll my eyes and just be like, I just don't freaking care. it ranks so low on my list of priorities right now. And I hope that even if I were somebody who smoked pot regularly, you know, that I would still think, all right, look, you know what, economy, this, and then way in the hell down there. Hey, you know what, I'd like to be able to smoke weed legally.
Anyway, one thing I wrote about prolifically this week was this ongoing Republican lie about the president's record on the budget deficit. And I posted something on the Daily Banter about it and then reposted it on the Huffington Post. And predictably, the Huffington Post reaction was just like, nah. I mean, it's basically like every right wing response on the Huffington Post. And I mean, it was like a bombardment of charts and facts and numbers that I gleaned from right wing bloggers, even to make a point. Like, this is one guy from Town Hall makes a point about the president's record on the deficit. And he rattles off the deficits from 2009 to 2012. All right. For basically 3 years of deficits. No, 9, 10, 11, 12. 4 years of deficits.
Right.
And what he fails to notice is that if you look at those numbers, the president has actually cut the deficit by $312 billion over those 4 years, over right. his entire first term. And noting that or failing to note that the 2009 federal budget deficit, $1.2 trillion of the $1.4 trillion deficit was all Bush administration spending requests. Mm-hmm. So the president inherited $1.2 trillion in 2009 in deficit and then added another $200 billion to come out to, you know, $1.4 trillion deficit for 2009. But since then, he's cut it by $312 billion. So, right. and it's right there in Town Hall, one of the farthest right blogs you could possibly find. And everyone in the comments on the Huffington Post said, nah, it's big spending.
Right.
I just want to go, and just bash your face against the
thing, though. I mean, you know, I did you see the thing that I put up at the Daily Banter today?
No,
you know,
I haven't
basically
seen it yet.
I talk quite a bit about what yours and my role are on this show, how we sort of interact, and the fact that that there are things that times that I just throw my hands up and I've given up, you know, and you are sort of more crusading right now, you know, it might change, and God knows we have our own pet subjects that we like, but you know, you're more crusading than I am because you truly believe that you know, arguing makes a difference and writing about things like that makes a difference, and I agree with you on a lot of things, but yeah, look, you know, there are times when it becomes so overwhelming that no one will listen to reason. And there are, not to play the both sides meme, but there are people on either extreme who behave that way, who just they're set in their ways and they won't listen. I do happen to think that there are far more of them on the right now than there are on the left. The yes. right has become its fringe. But the bottom line is, yeah, you just said it, you know. You can hit them with a million facts and figures and irrefutable math and numbers, and they'll just know, well, that's not the way it is, blah, 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 not listening. And it just becomes irritating after a while. It's like, you know, like you said, you feel like you're hitting yourself in the head with a phone book.
Yeah, but I think the thing you're missing, though, is that it's not about convincing the
right.
extremists
no.
on either
before,
side.
Before you even say it, I know, because we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
But yes, it is, and I said that in the thing that I wrote today. I said, I get that it's about convincing the people who are sort of I can't remember the exact words that I used to describe the people who are not filled with, you know, rage and resentment fueled anger and bitterness and insanity. You know, they're not suffering from a resentment fueled delusion.
Yeah.
The idea is to convince those people and show them how unreasonable this group is being. And you have to point that out wherever you can. But after a while, you just get to the point where it does, you know, you write something and you get those kinds of responses from people, and it just it makes your head spin.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I kind of dig it. I mean, on one hand, it is, I say it's infuriating, but it's infuriating on just on kind of a superficial level. Below that, I just love it, because on this particular issue, when all of the facts are so well lined up on the side of the Democrats and President Obama, it's just so easy to go in and go, well, you're wrong about that. Here's why. Or, you know, as I talked about last week, and it happened again this week, when they don't read what you've written. Like,
oh, yeah.
some guy commented, said, oh, Bob just, you know, attributed the stimulus to George W. Bush in this piece. And I said, quote, and then colon, and then in quotes, my line from the actual piece that says, the stimulus passed by President Barack Obama, also known as the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. You know, it's just like, oh, well, look, you're an idiot. You just, you know, and highlighting just real dumb stupid like that is so much fun to me.
It is. It's fun. And you're right. It's fun to back people into a corner where they show themselves for the morons that they are. You know, where they'll say something and you can hit them back with something that is absolutely irrefutable. And then eventually they just freak out and start saying, oh, he's not even from this country.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing to do. That's sort of the end result that I try to get the rare times that I do argue with somebody who is obviously very, very far right.
Yeah.
And I've had that happen a couple of times, like in bars and stuff like that, where, you know, start having a little debate with somebody and they try really hard to sort of talk about policy a little bit, and I'll confront them on it and say, well, no, that's not the case. Here's this, this, and this. And finally, after a while, it's like they just get frustrated enough to where, well, do we really know where he's from? Like that, yeah. And I always do it the same way. As soon as they say that, I'm like, you just lost. Thanks for playing.
And that's one of the responses today was, liberals always lie. ! I said, well, oh, good. Thank you for that. That's right. Just loaded for bear, aren't you?
Right, exactly.
Going to take another quick break and come back. I want to talk about one of the points that was brought up today. It was a USA Today piece linked by Drudge that relates directly to this, and we'll talk about that right after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
And we're brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. Pick up today. You can actually pause the show, or you can listen to the show and go to BubbleGenius.com. And while you're listening to the show, order up Bob's favorite hibiscus soap. Yeah, it's like the first time in my life, probably the last time, that I'll ever have a product named after me. An actual product that you can buy. Go and buy that.
I'm still waiting for Chez's Benoit balls.
You wait, they'll do it.
Please, bring it on.
They'll do it.
You think Bubble Genius girls would do that? You think they'd create like a bunch of little balls on like a string?
Yeah, a bunch of soapy balls on a string.
And name it after me. Oh my God. Paula, Sarah, I want that. I want that immediately. Please.
Cheswa balls.
Cheswa balls. Oh, I love it. Please. Please, girls. Please, I beg of you.
Oh God. Here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
Life stressing you out? Just not enough hours in the day? Finding yourself running ragged with little hope of just a little you time? Well, friend, fret no more. If you've got time for the shower, you've got time to get your zen on with I Can't Believe It's Not Buddha Soap on a Rope by Bubble Genius. You'll find the path to nirvana with this happy, sudsy Buddha, rendered in gentle, green tea-scented vegetable glycerin soap. And it's on a rope, so this guy can hang around your shower and bring you enlightenment each and every day. So let your troubles wash away and enjoy the peace of the here and now with I Can't Believe It's Not Buddha Soap on a Rope. Only from Bubble Genius, bringing some om to the bathroom. BubbleGenius.com.
shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
And make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Chez, B-O-B-A-N-D-C-A-G-Z, to get 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. And buy Bob's favorite hibiscus soap. It's a great soap, and it's named after me. So there's two reasons to go and pick up some of that today. And then stand by. It's just a matter of time before you'll be able to pick up Chez Pazienza's Chez Wah Balls. All right. So in all seriousness, there was a USA Today piece today, and it must have appeared in the comments under my Huffington Post duplication of my Daily Banter column about a dozen times. And I tried to respond to it with this, almost the same response every time it popped up. Because just the last few weeks, I've just felt cheeky and saucy. I felt saucy. So I've gone in and responded to some people on the Huffington Post, which I typically don't do, but I've decided to do it this week.
I never engage the peanut gallery.
Well, this,
don't feed the animals.
But this, I mean, when it's so easy, when they set themselves up for a winnable debate, it is so great. It is so satisfying. Like in this case, everyone's like, Drudge was linking to this USA Today piece. Everyone in the comments was linking to this USA Today piece. Basically, it's showing the real deficit based on actual accounting rules and not the way the federal government calculates the deficit. So this is like, these are like the USA Today rules in terms of how you calculate the deficit. Well, it turns out that the deficit for 2010 was, in reality, $1.3 trillion, which is a lot. But it's still lower than 2009, which means the president's lowered the deficit, yada, yada, yada. But USA Today calculated with their actual, their real deficit number, $5.6 trillion for 2010. And then for 2011, where the actual budget deficit was, I think it was about $10 million higher in federal government numbers in 2011 than it was in 2010. But still rounded to around $1.3 trillion. That was the actual number from the federal government, $1.3 trillion deficit for 2011. The actual, the real, in quotes, budget deficit for 2011, according to USA Today, is $5 trillion. So everyone's like, oh, my God, look, the president has, in fact, racked up a deficit of $5 trillion. Impeach, impeach.
Very clever.
Yeah.
I like that.
$5 trillion. And it's all over the right-wing blogs today. Well, it's right there, too, the fact that if you actually believe these numbers, $5.6 trillion in 2010 and $5 trillion in 2011, what does that tell us, Chez? Let's do the math. The president has, in fact, based on USA Today numbers, reduced the federal budget deficit by $600 billion in 1 year. $600 billion deficit reduction in 1 year. The other thing that irritates me about this piece is that they're just showing 2010 and 2011 in a vacuum. There's no context. We don't see any 30-year trends in terms of, well, where was Reagan on real budget deficit numbers? Where was Bush Sr. or Bill Clinton or George W. Bush? We don't know. We just don't know because they don't reveal any of that stuff. So if you see a number like $5 trillion in and of itself, you think, oh, holy crap. That's a shocking number.
By the way, just so you know, Inara is yelling at the TV that she wants stuff for her birthday. So, my apologies. I don't mean to interrupt you there.
Yeah, you know what? That always makes it easier. Thank you, TV, for giving us sweet, sweet ideas. Because, you know, that's easy. You know, it's hard buying presents for adults.
She's totally in that phase now where it's like, I want that for my birthday. Everything that's on TV.
It's so
easy. Inara, get off the couch.
So easy to buy stuff for kids. But when you get up to adults, you know, you ask your girlfriend or your boyfriend, your significant other, you say, well, what do you want for your birthday?
Oh, I don't know.
That's why you know what makes a great birthday gift?
Yeah.
Chez Wah Balls.
Chez Wah Balls. I don't know why I did that.
Oh, that's great. I love it. It's apparently making the kid laugh.
The idea of Chez Wah balls is hilarious to your four-year-old daughter. Yes.
Thankfully, she doesn't know what I'm talking about. It's a very good thing.
Anyway.
She's just talking up a storm. Anyway, so yeah, you're talking.
So,
hey, you don't bounce on the couch. See?
Yeah, no bouncing on the couch. You know, next thing you know, she'll be reporting deficit numbers from USA Today. So keep a good eye on her. So none of this is being reported in any sort of context whatsoever. So it looks gigantic and out of control, and we're all screwed. But right. In reality, you know, it could be that George W. Bush's 2009 real "quote unquote" deficit numbers were 5.9 or $6 trillion. We don't know because USA Today isn't telling us. And so, you know, every wingnut goes nuts and runs all over Huffington Post screaming bloody murder about $5 trillion deficits, even though it's right there. I mean, there's a graph that says 2010. I'm pointing right at it. I'm putting my finger right on it. $5.6 trillion deficit in 2010. A year later, the deficit is $5 trillion. That means a deficit reduction of $600 billion. It's basic subtraction.
Of course.
So the drama continues. There's a new Karl Rove Crossroads GPS ad that is horrific. It is terrible, terrible, terrible. And it's got this mom, and she's observing her kids playing basketball, and then she suddenly ages like 10 years. In the blink of an eye, and her kids are grown and they're all living in the same house. And then she starts ranting about the president's policies and the debt.
Is she white or black?
She's white.
Oh, okay. Of course she becomes an old white person who rants about the president.
Yes.
Yeah. And go figure.
Well, we're going to play the commercial after a quick break and we'll be back right after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
And we're back. There are households in this country, people watching television. They'll see a campaign commercial, see one of these super PAC ads or one of these PAC commercials. And not realize that it's run by Karl Rove, probably co-written, orchestrated by Rove, strategized by Rove. After years of hating this guy, where just by 2008, you know, I think it was pretty much consensus across all of the political spectrum that Karl Rove was just a flim-flam artist, like a giant baby with flesh-colored hair who just lied and just made crap up. Right. Well, they're going to infiltrate all of those undecided voters, those voters who don't keep up with the issues as well as we do, Chez. You know, if this ad airs a random market in the United States and it's mostly viewed by independent undecided voters who aren't really that connected, they're going to go, this is not good. Here's the latest commercial from Crossroads GPS, Karl Rove's outfit.
I always loved watching the kids play basketball. I still do, even though things have changed. It's funny.
Did you
hear? Yeah, the music cue changes very quickly.
But did you hear how her voice changes, too, as she ages? What? There was a morphing of her voice as well, where it starts out and she's younger and it's higher pitched. And then as she ages with like really crappy CG, her hair gets grayer and shorter and she gets more aged in the face. But her voice also gets lower. Listen to this.
I always loved watching the kids play basketball. I still do, even though things have changed.
And she also loves smoking menthols, evidently.
I used to love watching the kids play basketball.
Now she's doing Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, by the way, but now things have changed.
Then came menopause.
But no, as you say, then came the fifth of Jack Daniels a day.
Find jobs to get their career started. and I can't afford to retire. And now we're all living together again. I supported President Obama because he spoke so beautifully. He promised change.
Yeah, you hear that? That's the concern troll.
Right, the concern, exactly, concern trolling.
I was once a supporter of the president, and now he screwed me.
Oh, God, it's so cynical.
But things changed for the worse. Obama started spending like our credit cards have no limit. His health care law made health insurance even more expensive.
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, wrong.
But
cut the deficit.
Then he started staying out late and never coming home, and I didn't see him on the weekends, and he said he would go out and play poker with his friends.
We never talked like we used to.
We don't talk anymore.
Never takes me anywhere.
He was such a nice guy. He took me places, and he bought me flowers. And now, nothing. I don't know what I don't hear from him for days.
I promised myself I wasn't going to cry.
So, but you hear that, you know, spending on our credit card out of control, right? He has, the president, by every statistical measure, has cut spending, he's cut taxes, and he's cut the deficit. Across the board.
It just doesn't matter.
It just doesn't.
You can just lie. You can lie. It doesn't matter. You can get away with it now. Nobody cares. I mean, you know, Jesus.
What they're doing is, and this is the centerpiece of the Romney campaign.
Like you said, it's cynical.
Yeah, it's cynical. It's cynical. They know that no one's going to fact check it. They're just going to take it at face value. It feels like the president's increased the deficit. And yes, granted, the debt and the deficit are high right now. But there are X, Y, and Z dozens of reasons for why it's that way. And very little of it has to do with this president's policies. This president has actually, through his policies, cut the deficit, cut spending, and cut taxes. Much to my chagrin, because I'd rather him spend more, honestly. You know, there are things, the Bush tax cuts. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, long-term things, the biggest recession since the Great Depression. Some people are saying that the recession was worse than the recession during the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. So there are certain measures that you have to take to mitigate that crisis. And this president, regardless of whether you think he's a Muslim or you think he's a socialist, this president rescued the world economy from sinking into a second Great Depression. And a depression that I think would have been much worse this time around because we have so little, hardly any manufacturing base that we could actually seize upon during the first Great Depression and increase manufacturing. We were able to ramp up for World War II in the blink of an eye, practically. We can't do that now. We just don't have it, and we just don't. We're, America from coast to coast is becoming one big shopping mall. You know, you can't work your way out of a recession by giving people a tax cut and then say go shopping. Just doesn't work that way. So there are certain factors at play here that just were simply beyond this guy's control. Let's continue with this commercial here.
We've had stimulus and bailouts. Obama added almost $16,000 in debt for every American. How will my kids pay that off?
Once again, stimulus and bailouts used as pejorative terms, negative terms, even though every president has stimulus packages. George W. Bush had like, I don't know, what, three different stimulus packages that he passed? Most of them were tax cuts, but economic stimulus packages, that's the way what's what presidents do to stimulate economic growth. What is wrong with stimulus?
Yeah, the president tried to recover the economy, and that's terrible. What a jerk.
Yeah.
But yeah, so stimulus bailouts, even the bailout happened before the president was even the president. You know, but who cares? Everyone thinks the bailout and the stimulus is the same anyway. Everyone thinks the deficit and the debt are interchangeable. So this is what it's playing to ignoramuses, right?
Well, no, it's playing to people who want their biases confirmed, you know, or people who won't fact check, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because I think the thing that Romney has, I think what's going to damage Romney most is not the cold light of you know empirical evidence and facts. I think that what's going to wind up hurting him is the fact that he's just completely inauthentic. You know, I mean, it isn't just a matter of like, hey, look, he says these things that we can disprove. And, you know, Rove says these things that we can disprove. And the right in general says these things that we can disprove. I think it's going to come down to, I think the biggest problem for Romney, oddly enough, ironically and kind of sadly, is going to be his personality sucks. It's not that he's a BS artist. I mean, granted, you know, that is part of his personality. But it's not just that he lies about things that can very easily be proven to be the opposite of what he says, but it's just the fact that he personally comes off as creepily inauthentic. That's going to be a problem.
Creepily inauthentic. Yeah. And you mix
Uncanny Valley. I mean, I've heard so many people use that term now. I mentioned it for the first time the other day, and it immediately went to an article that I had linked to, or that was in an article that I had linked to that I hadn't read, where they mentioned that, where they brought up the Uncanny Valley thing, and that's what it is. There's something about him that I can't put my finger on that is just completely off-putting.
And I think
it's sad. It's a very sad sort of it's a sad sort of commentary on the way politics work now, that is going to be the thing, I think, that will hamstring him more than his out-and-out full of shit.
Yes. Romney's going around saying that the president doubled the budget deficit.
Exactly.
He doubled it. He did not double it. He did not double it. When he walked in the door of the White House on January 20th, 2009, the deficit was already at $1.2 trillion because of the recession and because of Bush's spending requests for 2009. All right? Had nothing to do with what President Obama did with the stimulus or health care or any of that. And the way things go, you know, you just something had to be done. Whether it was tax cuts, it was tax cuts. That would have increased the deficit, too. In fact, most of the stimulus was tax cuts for the middle class. In lieu of an absence of revenue, when you have a recession and people are earning less money and the economy is hemorrhaging jobs, fewer people are paying taxes because of the inability to earn money. You have to earn money before you pay taxes on that money. So the government's pulling in less money in an economic downturn. So you have higher spending to make up for the fact that, you know, the economy isn't spending money. And then you have lower revenue because of the hemorrhaging of jobs. So combined, you end up with a big deficit. And those big deficits accumulate into larger debt. Okay? And that's exactly what happens. You know, if the president, I'm sure, if the president can get into his 1.21 gigawatt DeLorean and go back to 2006 or 2005 or earlier to start to wind back some of these deregulatory policies that the Bush administration was passing, that Reaganomics contributed to for 30 years, then I think maybe he would do that. Because it sure as hell would be a lot easier than dealing with some of the idiots that he has to deal with now, saying that he somehow increased the deficit and the debt, you know, in three small years.
But the important thing to keep in mind is that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what he fixes. It doesn't matter what he does. They will say what they have to say to get elected. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in other words, what I'm trying to say is that he would have to deal with those idiots regardless. Yeah. They're always going to be there, and they're just going to lie, and there's nothing he can do to sort of deter that.
Yeah, well, he can't.
Nothing, not a thing.
Yeah, and that's what makes.
And I think you wrote something about. Did you write something about that where you know you're like basically, the Republicans really have nothing real to sort of hang around his neck, which is why they come up with these idiotic, you know, teleprompter memes and birther crap and all that. I mean, that's the best they can do.
Yeah. And that's what I wrote about today in the Daily Banter.
They'll make crap up mm-hmm. to go after him for. It doesn't matter what he does. That's the most important thing about it. It's like, you know, it's like the thing I wrote for the Daily Banter about birtherism. It can't be disproven. It won't be because it doesn't matter. It needs to continue. It's self-sufficient.
Yeah. If the premise of that argument is based on hocus pocus BS, then how do you disprove hocus pocus BS to a bunch of people who are in the process of repeating it over and over again? It just they're in a different universe of non-reality.
There's a really good quote from I think it was from God Is Not Great, from Hitchens' book. Mm-hmm. That which can be asserted without evidence can be disproved without evidence. I'm having a tough time talking today. And I always really like that quote.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're offering me something and you have no evidence to back it up, I don't need to give you any evidence to refute it.
That's right. That's right. And that I think speaks to the entire Republican strategy.
Yeah.
Here's Jay Carney today, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney, talking to the press. And, you know, again, I don't think the White House is innocent in all of this. The White House has done a super crappy job of promoting its own successes. And so Jay Carney in the White House press room sort of criticized the press corps for not reporting the facts on the deficit and the Obama administration record on the deficit and the debt. And I think the almost to a fault, the fiscal responsibility that they have taken throughout this the past 3 years. I simply make the point, as an editor might say, to check it out. Don't buy into the BS that you hear about spending and fiscal restraint with regard to this administration. I think doing so is a sign of sloth and laziness.
Excellent.
So Jay Carney winning friends in the White House press corps. But it's true. It's absolutely true. You know, there's just a meme
sloth,
out there saying
sloth, wrath, envy, pride.
Yeah, that's right.
All the other seven deadly sins.
So, but I mean, there's a meme going around out there now that the president is responsible for all of the fiscal woes happening. It's simply not true. It's not true. The president has gone out of his way, I think, to much to the chagrin of, again, of those of us who are Keynesians, who think that in an economic recovery as slow as this one, more spending ought to take place in the short term, and then we focus on deficits in the long term. You know, he's been cutting, and it's the Republicans now who are reneging on the debt ceiling deal they made last summer. So let's just wrap up the show here. I think we're obviously not going to get to everything I had planned for today's show. So we're going to have to talk about it on the after party tomorrow. If you're not so be it. If you're not a subscriber to the after party yet, please go over there. And you're missing, I think the real meat and potatoes of what it is that that Chez and I do in terms of podcasting. It's a fun hour where we just sometimes it's political. And today it will be because we've got some things that are going to fall into it from the free show. But most of the time it's just a blast. We have funny audio clips that we play. I know this week we're going to be talking about the premiere of the new season of Food Network Star, which I have some observations on that.
That's fun. Taryn's sitting right here in front of me, and she will be interested in getting into that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, she's welcome to join in on the conversation about it because, you know, it's one of those shows, Food Network Star, that I both love and hate. In fact, I find myself revamping my opinion every couple of minutes as I'm watching. I'm like, this is the worst thing ever. Why are they doing that? And then I go, wow, this is so compelling. I want to keep watching. So we're going to get into it on the after party. So and you can't listen to it unless you subscribe. So it's about $6 a month. And you do it through PayPal, and it's an auto-renew until you want to give up and go home with all your toys.
Your hard-earned $1.50.
And, you know, you just go to PayPal. If you want to cancel, you just go to PayPal and cancel. It's as easy as that. But being a member is quite simple, and you get a new show every Friday, almost without fail. And I think it's of the two shows that we do, it's my favorite. And you know what? Coming soon, I'm going to be doing a third podcast every week, believe it or not. We got news news on that coming up in a couple of weeks. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely, and we'll see you on the after party tomorrow. Bye.
See ya.
Business bad? you, pay me. Oh, you had a fire? You, pay me. Place got hit by lightning, huh? You, pay me.